This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Joni Johnston is joining us, clinical and forensic psychologist. We're diving in to get her perspective on what's going on in the case against Brian Koberger. Joni, the alibi is he likes to drive at night. Thoughts?
Well, my sense is the defense probably worked with what they had.
Yeah.
I mean, I have four kids. They're adults, and they drive around a lot. They love to go together and go on these drives. The issue, though, is where are you driving to? Why are you turning your phone off when you're driving? Or are you routinely doing that? So I think the challenge for the defense is, you know, it is a very generic alibi. They did have to work with what they had. And it's, you know, it's something that can literally be tested. I mean, his phone should be able to tell them or to tell them everybody how often he was driving around at night and where he was driving to and how often he turned all his phone off. So if he was this kind of night wanderer, then, you know, given the other evidence, he's still going to have a tough road, I think, to hoe, but at least it would give some credibility to what he's saying.
I guess the question would be, even if they can establish a pattern of behavior here with other trends on his phone showing that, yes, he does drive this route a lot at night, would that be positive or negative for him, considering they have already looked at that and have seen that he does drive that route and kind of has stalked is what they're believing has been going on prior to the actual night of the murders?
Well, that's a problematic part, right?
Yeah.
So it is a problem if you are a night wanderer only to a specific location. So I think where you're driving to and why you're driving there is going to be a critical part of this alibi. So I guess in theory, if you show that this is somebody who every night, you know, for the past 8 months, drove hundreds of different places and just happened on 12 occasions to go by the house where four people were murdered, you know, you could at least make the argument that, yeah, he did drive by this area 12 times, but look, he drove 200 other times to, you know, 550 other locations. Again, even then, this is obviously just one piece of the puzzle, right?
Sure.
So even then, you have all the other evidence that everybody's gathered or the prosecutors have gathered that he's going to have to speak to. So again, I think ultimately, this alibi, you know, is almost like an admission in a way that, yeah, he was out driving around on this night. I don't know what else you do if you are the defense and that's all you have.
Are we missing something here? Is there more to this? Is there something more to the defense coming out and making this statement? Because obviously it doesn't look very good. It looks on the surface kind of desperate or just playing into, yeah, we have the records that he was out driving. But what exactly was he doing? Are they going to take this into an angle and try and attack the cell phone triangulation and show some sort of possibility of error there or a degree of possible error there and try and punch holes in it by using this sort of alibi?
Well, certainly that will be part of their testimony. They're going to be having experts, I'm sure, come on and talk about how inaccurate, you know, triangulation is or the range that these towers can actually reach and those kinds of things. I mean, that's going to be part probably of the defense. But again, you know, I think it is very problematic when you have somebody who's driving to the same location 12 times, particularly evidence, at least what has been published, that he drove not just once to King Road on the night of the murders, but he drove back the next morning.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be very difficult to be a distraction if you're out riding around.
Without a doubt. When we're talking about the crime itself, considering that the victims were asleep when they were attacked, does that tell us anything about his choice in terms of vulnerability, attacking someone who isn't necessarily ready and able to fight back, that he found targets that were somewhat soft, if you will, although it does appear that towards the end, there was some of a fight back.
Well, I mean, most people who commit premeditated murder are looking to either murder a vulnerable victim or they're looking to find someone in a vulnerable position. It's very rare that somebody is, particularly when they're looking to murder a stranger, looking to somehow test their physical prowess.
Sure.
On their alleged victim by picking somebody who's as strong as they are or, you know, who is as intimidating as they are. They're looking for somebody they can easily control. And certainly, you know, sneaking into a house and, you know, attacking somebody in their sleep. I mean, how much more vulnerable can you be as a victim?
Yeah.
How much easier would it be if you're the perpetrator when somebody is completely unconscious and unaware that somebody's even in the room?
Without a doubt. When we're looking at the crimes that have been committed here and trying to evaluate the individual, the fact that these crimes were committed kind of in the circle of where he travels. This is an area where, you know, the crimes were committed. He certainly heard about them. We know he heard about them while he was teaching. His choice to go all the way to this part of the country, all the way out to live in Pullman, Washington, then to drive over to Moscow to allegedly commit these sort of crimes. Is there something to that he wanted to do this not only in the area where he lived, but further away from where he originally called home? This was not his regular home base area, but to move out there, then commit these sort of crimes elsewhere than where his main residence is back in Pennsylvania. The fact that it occurred out in Washington and Idaho areas, does that speak to anything in terms of his psyche or why he would choose to go all the way over there?
You know, I think it does, Tony, in the sense that I know that there was some people who came forward after Koberger was arrested saying that he was oftentimes lurking on, you know, on the Idaho campus as opposed to the Washington State campus. Now, there have been some other, I guess, allegedly creepy behavior on his part, even at the university he was attending. But I think it makes sense that he would pick a place that was close enough to be familiar to him. He obviously was familiar with this campus and familiar with the locale, but wasn't too close where he would, you know, be noticed by people who knew him, by his students and those kinds of things. And so in addition to there, you know, certainly being, I think, something about at least one of these victims that drew him, I think he probably did, you know, in terms of looking at some of his sexual interest and his voyeurism and his stalking, those kinds of things. It does make sense to me that he would look a little bit further from home than picking somebody who he might run into on the way to teaching a class.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.